Just put these kings in front of us that we've looked at thus far in our study as we've gone through the auditorium this last quarter and now beginning in this quarter. We've added Hezekiah. And the kings that are good, the kings that are evil, they're still pretty well balanced. Of course, much better balanced than that of the northern kingdom where we looked at, where all of them were wicked kings. But we've kind of reached a tipping point. Hezekiah, obviously a really good king, but the wicked kings are going to be more pronounced. They're going to have more of an effect. Ahaz, the great damage that he did just before Hezekiah. And now once Hezekiah is done, you're going to have a couple more bad kings then before you get Josiah, who's really the last bright spot before this kingdom just slides off the map. And as we mentioned before, without God, and when they're behaving wickedly, they're without God and without His protection. Without God, these kingdoms are insignificant. And that kind of rings true today, even as we see the Assyrian threat come down upon them, how much more powerful this nation is. And the only way that Judah is going to be delivered is through the power of God and through their trust in God. So we're up through Hezekiah now, just to get a lay of the land as far as the map goes. Now that Syria is gone, Israel is gone, you can see just how small we have Judah down here. Most of Philistia is gone. Tyre is still an independent city, but all of that territory is gone. Ammon is down to next to nothing. Moab still has a king, but all of these are under heavy tribute to the Assyrian nation now. One that is fighting Assyria is the Egyptian king down to the south, and he's not doing so very successfully, but he's more of a major player than what these smaller ones are, and he's happy to have these buffer states, and we'll have some interaction between Judah and Egypt, or reference to interaction and alliance between Judah and Egypt, even in this lesson, as Egypt tries to protect itself from this Assyrian threat. Just keep in mind the cities that we're talking about, Jerusalem, the capital city, and down here at Lachish and Libna is where we're going to see activities of the Assyrian army come into play. Just a quick review on how did Assyria get onto the scene and how did they affect Judah so quickly. In the days of Ahab, he was threatened by Pekah there in Israel and Rezin in Syria. So it was during this reign of Pekah when he did that. And just because of his wickedness in general, Edom, Philistia, all of these other nations are pushing on every side of Judah. And he calls for help, and he calls for help from Assyria. Tiglath-Pileser or Pileser, depending on which translation of the Bible that you're reading. And he sends for help from them. And he didn't get the help that he wanted. The Assyrian king was coming down anyway. He had designs on that particular area. He had designs all the way down to Egypt. He was happy to take tribute from Ahaz and then continue to do what he wanted anyway. So it's like calling in the bear to take care of your fox problem or something like that. He's really bringing on more trouble than it's worth. So Ahaz had sent word to Assyria to help him, but instead he received stress from him and strengthened him not. Ahaz reigned for about 16 years, and it's in this later portion of his reign where this has happened, just to kind of give you a timeline to get us to where we're at and how Assyria plays into it. And it's during this later time in Ahaz's reign where Damascus falls and Syria falls to the king of Assyria. And then early into the reign of Hezekiah, kind of where we were talking about on Wednesday, would be the time that Shalmaneser, a different king than the one that took away Damascus, is laying siege to Samaria. He lays siege to Samaria for a couple of years. He doesn't complete that before he dies, and it's Sargon II that comes in, and he completes that subjugation of the Israelite nation to where they're not a nation anymore, and he takes them away into captivity. And so if you're a citizen of Judah during the reign of Hezekiah, you've seen all of this. You have seen this Assyrian threat emerge just before Hezekiah comes to the throne. And then you've seen this neighbor to the north that used to be your people laid siege to for a long time, horrendous conditions, and then carried away into captivity. And then you see this army, this unstoppable force, as it were, coming to you. So just kind of put yourselves in that position a few times today as we go through this narrative of the Assyrians coming to Judah. And again, just to show where we're at. All right, well, Hezekiah, he begins preparing for this invasion. But no, this is about the 14th year of Hezekiah. What are the spiritual conditions here in Judah when Sennacherib comes down and he begins to seriously threaten Judah? And by seriously threaten, he's over there at Lachish with his whole army, and he sends officers over with a great army, and they stand outside the city wall of Jerusalem. What's the spiritual situation in Judah at this time? Exactly. Hezekiah is acting faithfully. Just as Brad pointed out in verse 1 of chapter 32, after these things and these acts of faithfulness. Well, all of this last quarter we talked about how God will reward those who are obedient and punish those who are disobedient. How do we reconcile those things together? Yes. And is God going to reward the faithfulness by the end of this story? Well, he sure is. There's going to be a threat. There's always going to be threats in this world. But those that are willing to follow God, be obedient to Him, and be faithful to Him, they can find comfort in knowing that God will deliver. Deliverance may not always be what we think it is, but God will deliver. So even during this time of faithfulness is when we see these things begin to happen. So what are some of the things that Hezekiah does to prepare for this battle? It does say that he rebelled against the king of Assyria. And so the Assyrian king comes down and he's ready to make that right again. Hezekiah knows he's coming. What are some of the things that Hezekiah is going to do? Yeah, and I think that's an important thing to note. He did all the physical things that he could do, and really a pretty smart thing tactically to do to close up the cave where the water ran into the city or just below the city. He closed up that cave, built a tunnel so they would have the water. They would always have water, which would be important in a siege situation, and he would deprive the Assyrians of water. But most important, or very importantly also, is he sits down and he talks to the people and he explains to them why they're going to be okay and the faith that he has in God. This is chapter 32 of 2 Chronicles, beginning verse 6. And he set captains of war of the people and gathered them together in the broad place at the gate of the city. And he spake comfortably to them. Be strong and of good courage. Do not be afraid nor dismayed for the king of Assyria nor for all the multitude that is with him. For there is a greater with us than with him. With him is an arm of flesh, but with us is Jehovah our God to help us and to fight our battles. And the people rested themselves upon the words of Hezekiah the king. So right now he has the faith of the people behind him. The people are willing to follow where Hezekiah is willing to lead. And so he prepares them to do that. Sennacherib indeed does come down. He's laying siege to the city of Lachish. And Hezekiah tries a few other things first. He says, it was wrong for me to rebel. I'm willing to pay whatever tribute you ask, and I'll do that now. And the king of Assyria says, okay, I'll take 30 talents of silver, or 300 talents of silver, 30 talents of gold. How does Hezekiah go about paying for that? Yeah, he takes from the treasury of the temple, he takes from the treasury of his own house. And so again, as we've seen before, all of this wealth of Solomon that he accumulated that made it such a wealthy nation has slowly been peeled away. And now as we get towards the end of these kingdoms, you wonder how much is left to be taken away. So he takes all of those things, and that really doesn't encourage Sennacherib to go away. He's still there. And so he sends these officers there. These are probably the titles of officers rather than specific names. Tartan, Rabsaris, and Rabshakeh. Rabshakeh is going to do all the speaking. And he's going to come with an army. Again, put yourself in the position of somebody that's living in Jerusalem at that time, knowing the events of the last 10 years. And you're there, one of the guards on the wall, and you're looking out over the wall, and you see this army. And you know what they've done to the nations to the north of you, how they've been unstoppable. Undoubtedly, their reputation for cruelty has followed them, and this was a tactic that they would use. They would come and they would say, "It's us. It's Assyria. You know what we're going to do? Are you going to fight us, or are you just going to give up?" And a lot of times, some of the other nations would just give up rather than face that. So that army is standing outside of you. outside of your city. And then the Rabshakeh, he begins speaking. And he speaks very insolently in the things that he has to say, probably very persuasively and probably very demoralizing in the things that he has to say. And so he has quite a few things that he addresses in his speech, the first of which is that Judah shouldn't take trust in who? This could be a trick question, I guess. There's a couple of folks that he says don't take trust in. The first one, what man should they not, what nation should they not take trust in? Don't take trust in Egypt. Egypt appears to be a power down there, but if you take trust in Egypt, it's not going to work out well for you. It's going to be like you've got a staff and you're leaning on that staff and it's splintered at the top. It's going to pierce right through your hand. It's going to do you harm and not good. Don't trust in Egypt. And then what man does he say don't trust in? He says don't trust in Hezekiah. Hezekiah is trying, he's trying to trick you. He's saying that Jehovah is going to be able to deliver you and you can't trust that. Just look at, he's going to go on to say here in a little bit, look at all of these other nations we've defeated. They've had gods. They thought their gods were good. Their gods were able to do nothing against this great king of Assyria and the fathers of the king of this king. That's right. Yeah, that's a good point. The other thing he says is, in fact, this Hezekiah, what has he done? He's taken away, and he almost attributes these high places and other altars to Jehovah, because you think that God is going to deliver you? Well, Hezekiah has taken away all of these other areas where you could worship God. He says you have to do it right here in front of this temple at this particular altar. You've weakened yourselves. Don't expect this God to deliver you. Exactly. It's like he's throwing everything in the book at him, isn't it? He's like, don't trust Hezekiah. He's not gonna steer you right. Don't trust your God. Your God won't be able to deliver you. And oh, by the way, your God told me that I should come and destroy you. Yes, yes. He's gonna do what, I mean, whatever the people in Judah might be thinking, he's going to have an argument for them that they're gonna weaken their resolve and make them want to surrender. And he said that Assyria could give them thousands of horses, if they like, and chariots. So much so that they wouldn't even be able to put men on them. So how could they stand even against the least force of Assyria should they come against them? And the point is, this is hopeless. You don't want to do this. It's going to end horribly for you. It's going to end in a siege. He speaks and all this time he's speaking in the Hebrew dialect. And those that have come out, Eliakim, Shebna, Joah, the officers that Hezekiah has sent to talk to the Rabshakeh, they say, you don't need to speak in Hebrew. We understand the Aramaic. Just speak to us in that. But the Rabshakeh knew exactly what he was doing. He says, I'm not here just to talk just to you. I'm talking to the people on the wall. I want them to understand what Hezekiah, your king, is doing to them, the danger that he's putting them in, and then the fact that if they don't surrender, the siege will be on. You'll be eating your own dung. You'll be drinking your own urine. It will be a horrible situation. You don't want to do this. And the people would hear that. And imagine yourself again being on the wall and hearing that statement. Then he changes his tact a little bit. And he says, it's going to be horrible if you don't surrender. But if you do surrender, what will it be like? Life will continue just as it always had continued until what? I'll take you to Israel part two, right? And it will be just, everything will be just like it always was, and life will be grand. There's no need for you to go through this. And again, he reiterates that, look at all of these other nations. Their gods couldn't protect them. Your God won't be able to protect you.
This is the people.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, so it could be very effective if the people listen to this. And so he spoke more and more against God and more against Jehovah, and I think, or more against Hezekiah. The thing that I think really sticks out to me is verse 19 there, 32. And they spake of the God of Jerusalem as the gods of the people of the earth, which are the works of men's hand. And said, your God is nothing special. Don't take special care that he's going to protect you, or special pride in that. It's not going to be any different at all. These messengers, they take that message back to Hezekiah. Hezekiah sends a messenger to Isaiah. And first of all, the people keep silence about this. So Hezekiah does have the will of the people right now. He said, don't answer this. When these men come to talk, don't answer them. And they don't. So Hezekiah and Isaiah, they take this threat to God, and they say that the Sennacherib has defied you, God. What are you going to do about that? And God says, don't you worry about it. Don't be afraid of the things that you have heard. I will put a spirit in him. He will hear tidings, and he will go to his own land, and I will cause him to fall by his own sword. He will hear rumors of wars. Bad things are going to happen. And sure enough, just about that time, the Rabshakeh, he goes back to Lachish, and he finds out that the king is not at Lachish anymore. He's moved to Libna. And at that same time, he hears that an army from Ethiopia is coming up to attack him. And so he makes preparations to meet that threat. And so God diverts the direct threat that's standing right outside Jerusalem's walls. But before he leaves, Sennacherib writes a letter to Hezekiah, and he says, I haven't forgotten about you, Hezekiah. And don't think that your God is going to be able to deliver you. I've utterly destroyed all the rams around them, just more of the same tactics. God, their gods didn't protect them. Your God won't protect you. What does Hezekiah do with this letter? I mean, that is, I don't know if you want to call it symbolic or literal. He goes out there and he puts that letter and he says, I mean, God knew what the contents of the letter were, what the contents of the letter was, but he puts the letter out there in front of God in the temple where God dwells among the people. And he says, God, look at this. And what are you going to do about this? Mm-hmm. Yeah. He knows that that's where he's going to meet God, and that's where God is going to hear him. And he delivers we've talked about last quarter, that beautiful prayer that Jehoshaphat had when he was in trouble. This is another one of these things that just show total dependence on God and total trust in God, that he's going to do what he says he's going to do. Beginning there in verse 14 of 2 Kings chapter 19 is where we have the account of this letter. It says, and Hezekiah received the letter from the hand of the messengers and read it. And Hezekiah went up to the house of Jehovah and spread it before Jehovah. And Hezekiah prayed before Jehovah and said, O Jehovah, the God of Israel, that sittest above the cherubim, thou art the God, even thou alone, of all the kingdoms of the earth. Thou hast made heaven and earth. Incline thine ear, O Jehovah, and hear. Open thine eyes, O Jehovah, and see, and hear the words of Sennacherib, wherewith he has sent him to defy the living God. Of a truth, Jehovah, the kings of Assyria have laid waste to the nations in their lands, and have cast their gods into the fire. Was that all true? That was exactly true. But what's the difference? Those are the works of men's hands. For they were no gods, but the work of men's hands, wood and stone. Therefore they destroyed them. It's no wonder that these gods didn't protect the people, because they weren't really gods. Now therefore, O Jehovah, our God, save thou us, I beseech thee, out of his hand, that all the kingdoms of the earth may know that thou, Jehovah, art God alone. So not only just save us for our sakes, but in doing this, what will you do? You will let all the nations around you know that this is the true God. This is the God that can protect. Those other gods were unable to do it, but you will be able to do it. Look over in 2 Kings. I don't have this up on the screen. Go ahead, Tony. Mm-hmm. Yes, and it demonstrates that he's fully putting his trust in God. He doesn't put in this prayer, these are the things that I've done, and now if you could help me out and kind of fill in the gaps, or this is my second thought, I've done all I can do, now I'm going to pray to God. No, that's the first place he goes. The first place he goes is to pray to God. Look over in 2 Kings chapter 19. I don't have this up on the screen. Beginning in verse 25, the response that he gets via Isaiah from God is that Assyria is doing exactly what I planned for them to do long ago. The only problem is they don't know that. They think that they're the ones that are in control. Beginning of verse 25, have you not heard? Long ago I did it. From ancient times I planned it. Now I have brought it to pass that you should turn fortified cities into ruinous heaps. Therefore their inhabitants were short of strength. They were dismayed and put to shame, as if they were the vegetation of the field and as the green herb, as grass on the housetop is scorched before it has grown up. But I know you're sitting down and you're going out and you're coming in and you're raging against me. Assyria, I've used you as a tool, and you've taken that to your head, and now you've come to me and you've spoken to me like I'm just one of the other gods, and I'm going to show you that I'm not just one of the other gods. So he says, I will punish you for that, verse 28, because of your raging against me and because of your arrogance has come up to my ears. Therefore, I will put my hook in your nose and my bridle in your lips, and I will turn you back the way which you came. Assyria, I'm going to deal with you just like I would an animal that I want to take somewhere. And it would be that simple. And in fact, normalcy would return to Judah. Their harvest times would reap when they were supposed to. Nothing would be disrupted in their normal scheme of life because of the Assyrian threat, because it would be gone. In fact, Assyria, they wouldn't lay the siege mound. They wouldn't even shoot an arrow into the city of Jerusalem. So great comfort that Hezekiah could take from that. And in fact, God did that right away. That night, what happened that very night? Yeah, you wake up the next day, and I don't know how big this Assyrian army was, but you wake up the next day and close to 200,000 of them are gone. That kind of puts a dent in your plans for invasion, not just of Jerusalem, but of whatever plans you had before that. So Sennacherib has nothing else to do other than to take what he has left, to turn around, and he goes home. And while he's worshiping in the house of his god of Nisroch, his own sons come in and kill him. And if you think back to the first message that God delivered to Hezekiah when he prayed to him after that first threat, the speech by the Rabshakeh, he says he's going to hear rumors of wars, he's going to go away, he'll go back to his own land, and he'll be killed by the sword. And that's exactly what happened. Exactly what God said would happen is what happens. So he's killed by his own sons. And for a time, that puts an end to this Assyrian threat. Are there any questions or comments, other points to bring out about this, Brad? Yeah. 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 Great point. Any other comments on his dealings with Assyria? Okay, we'll take a little bit, the last 10 minutes of class here, to talk about the other two stories that we have about Hezekiah. This first one of his sickness, it's recorded after these events. It probably most likely, if you look at some of the dates, took place during the very real threat of this Assyrian invasion. So not only does he have the most powerful in the nation in the world pressing down on him outside his city walls, literally, at some point during this, he's very near unto death. It appears to have been caused by some sort of boil. He wouldn't have been a very particularly old man, I don't think, at this point in his life. If you notice the prayer of thanksgiving that he gives there, I think it's in Isaiah, after all of this is done, he says, I was cut down in the prime of my life. I was ready to die, and I was still not an old man. I should have had years in front of me, but I didn't. So it's during this time, probably caused by some sort of boil based on what they do to treat the sickness to make him well. He is sick. Isaiah comes to him, and he says, set your house in order. You're going to die and not live. What's his reaction to that? What does Hezekiah do? He turns to God. He turns to the wall. He prays to God. He beseeches him. What's the content of his prayer? He says, you remember me for the things that I've done. So there's nothing wrong in a time of trouble as we look at this prayer and this example of prayer to say, God, I've been zealous for you. I've been doing the best I can to seek you and to do your work. And I want you to remember me for that. And that's exactly what he does. And he weeps bitterly for the coming death that he believes that is coming. Before Isaiah even gets through the middle court, God comes to him and he says, you go back to Hezekiah and you tell him that for 15 more years, I will give him life. And then he goes on and he gives a song of thanksgiving, a prayer or a speech of thanksgiving. And in that he says, I'm going to live very deliberately from this point. I'm going to walk very softly. I'm going to consider carefully all the steps of my life because of how close that I was to death. I think a lesson for us there is maybe we don't have the sickness to show us how close we are to death, but we ought to walk with that same care, that same deliberateness, recognizing that we're only here because God preserves our life here. So he's given 15 more years. Incidentally, how old is Manasseh when Manasseh begins to reign? Does anybody remember? He's 12. So within those gifted 15 years is when the next king is born. I would guess there would probably be another heir. It could have been another one of those situations where by man's perspective, God's promise of the line of Judah is hanging by a thread, but God had plans for how that would play out. There could have been another heir. Certainly the heir that they got in those last 15 years was unfortunate in the man that Manasseh would become, but he would be born during that same time. Comments or questions on Hezekiah and his sickness and the power of prayer of a righteous man. How many times last quarter did we look at Jehoshaphat getting himself in trouble, but because of his relationship with God, his attempt to do what God wanted him to do, God would help him. And now we see a similar thing. Hezekiah is sick unto death, but God remembers the type of man Hezekiah has been, and he says, I'll preserve him for another 15 years. I'll give him 15 more years. Yeah, so the sign given, Isaiah kind of directs him towards the sign. He says, should the shadow move forward 10 degrees or should it move back 10 degrees? And Hezekiah's like, well, forward is easy. Show me backward. And how different is that from Ahaz, right? Where God said to Ahaz through the prophet, ask God for a sign. I won't do it. Not going to do it. Hezekiah's like, I'll do it. You show me this sign so I know that in 3 days I'll be walking up the temple steps again. So a great deal of trust and dependence upon God. Other comments? Yeah. Yes. So we've seen pretty much in all of the accounts of this, the story of Hezekiah, the first place he's always ready to go immediately. The Rabshakeh comes immediately. He says, send to Isaiah and have him ask God. Sennacherib sends the letter immediately. He goes to the house of God. He spreads the letter before God. Isaiah walks in. You're going to die and not live. Turns his face to the wall and he begins to pray. This was a man that believed God could help him and was keyed in on that. Trevor? Yeah. Yeah. The negative person would say, look at all that I've done for God and now he tells me I'm going to die and that's it. I'm done with God. That wasn't Hezekiah at all. Right. Good comments. We've got time for the last story here. We'll talk about this, the last part of the narrative. After Hezekiah has recovered, he's visited by some Babylonian envoys. Baladan Marmad... I knew I would mess that up and I didn't write it down. Baladan Marduk came to visit him from Babylon. He was known for rebelling against the Assyrians. Right now, Babylon is not a world power. They're a smaller power. They'll be growing soon. And he's happy to befriend anyone who is also resisting the Assyrian rebellion. But they'd heard of Hezekiah's sickness. They have heard of how he has recovered. And so he sends some messengers to him. And what does Hezekiah do with these messengers? Yep. And why? What was his motive? What was his motivation in that? Pride. Yeah. It says there in 2 Chronicles 32:25, it says, his heart was lifted up. And in chapter 39 of Isaiah, when these envoys come and they ask to see his things, he says, and he was glad of them and showed them the house. He was happy. Oh, you want to see? Let me show you all that I have. And in that moment of pride, he did just that. And he showed them everything. And after they left, Isaiah comes to him and he said, who are those people? Well, they're messengers. They're from Babylon. And what did you show them? I showed them everything, all that I had. And he says, well, there will come a time now where all that you have showed them, they will carry away into Babylon with them. And some of your own children and sons they will take, and they will all go to Babylon. I find the response a little bit odd, his response to that. Well, you know, thankfully this is not going to happen in my days. I'm not sure what to make of that entirely. But that's how he responds to it. And then it goes on to say that he retired. He goes on to live the rest of his reign with great power, great renown, great honor. The other not only in his own country, but with the nations around him respect him. He ends up being a very powerful king because of the deliverance that God brings to him. But now the die is cast, and we can see that sometime down the road, it will be Babylon will be the one that will be carrying this people away. Comments or questions? We've got a few applications we can make in the last couple of minutes. But go ahead, Trevor. Okay. Good point. Anything else? Good point. Just a couple of applications to leave with you. We're about to be out of time. We've talked about that just because Hezekiah was faithful didn't mean that difficult times wouldn't come. It just means that he had a place to rely on God and allow God to provide that deliverance. And he did just that. Look at the Rabshakeh and the way that he talked every way possible to discourage God's people. And if we look around us today, it seems like every way possible, Satan is using tools to try to discourage us. And we have to recognize those for what they are and not be so discouraged. All right, I think that's about it. We're out of time. So I appreciate your comments, and Stephen will pick up again on Wednesday, Lord willing.